please.
Thank you. Some citizens complain about being under surveillance, but they are told that if they have nothing to hide, they have nothing to fear. Still, news media regularly cover cases where citizens with unusual behavior are put on suspicion lists, even though they have broken no laws. Now, this quote is from a journal, luckily a journal from 2025. It's Edrogram 300th edition by Jesper Lund, this article here. But I'm a bit worried that this might be the future that we are all moving into. The main problem, the main argument against hiding something is here on the slide. I've written it as a mathematical formula. Now, for those of you who've skipped those classes or haven't haven't studied IT, it says basically for every person that is a criminal, that person has something to hide. And from that follows that for every person that is hiding something, that person is one of the criminals. Now, in this room, we obviously know this is not true. But this is a very common misconception. And it's one of the bases under this false argument, I've got nothing to hide. Now, I want to bring something new to the table. I've created a concept called Schrödinger's video camera. You may know Schrödinger's cat, right? You have a cat in a box. There's radiative decay going on, and the box, the cat, either dies or not. You don't know until you open the box. Now, Schrödinger's video camera is a similar concept, but it applies to privacy. Imagine that you've just rented a nice flat. For example, this flat here in Paris. And you've lived there for a couple months. And then, one day you notice that a security camera appears outside your window. The security camera uses non-transparent dome, so you are unable to see. Is the camera looking at you? Is there a camera inside there? Or is that just a dome without a camera? Regardless, the feeling, the uneasy feeling that me and most of you probably get is the same. It doesn't matter if the camera is there or not. You feel uneasy because you're being watched. And that, for me, is the essence of privacy. Privacy is a feeling that you have. Of course, it's also about all the technical things, all the good stuff we can do to protect it from the technical perspective and from legal perspective. But I work with privacy, I battle for privacy because I want to feel safe, I want to feel calm. And Schrödinger's video camera shows us that it may be the case with many of you. Now, what privacy is? Privacy, as you all know, is autonomous right to choose who will process your information, who will be the person you entrust your information to, how will the information be processed, and of course, what information is processed. And this is an important aspect of consent here, because I may be okay with Google processing my information, but I may be not okay with DuckDuckGo processing it, or vice versa. I may be okay with using my information to deliver a package to me, but not okay with sending a killer squad to my house using the same address. I may be okay to give you my postal address, but not my phone number, or vice versa. And I have my own reasons, and it's part of my autonomous right, which means that you do not have anything to say in this matter. That is my autonomous decision. Now, it's also the right to decide who I interact with. And part of that right is the right to be left alone, which is recognized by most countries around the world. If I don't want to talk to you, I don't have to talk to you. If you don't want to talk to me, you have the right to not be in my presence. So that's another important right that is part of privacy. I've given a different privacy talk a year ago at Chaos Fest stage in CCC. And I've gotten some interesting reactions to that talk. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to take a look at some of those reactions and discuss them. So first of all, of course, we have why don't you wear a mask when doing a presentation? Well, that's a funny one, right? Consent obviously. We also have such stuff as, you know, your phone tracks you anyway. Yeah, but I have the right to be tracked, right? If I want to be tracked, I have the right to use the phone if I want to use the phone. I mean, of course, it's not entirely free choice because not using the phone is really hard these days. But still, if I feel that my threat model or my threat level at the time warrants it, I have the right to not use the phone. I have the right to wear a mask. Well, depends on the legislation. In Latvia, where I'm from, for example, they wanted to ban the right to cover your face in public. But luckily, we did a good job, and they didn't pass that. They killed that project. So when dystopia comes to Latvia, we will be able to wear a mask, unless they change the legislation, of course. Now, of course, the Facebook argument, right? Once again, any of you are not on Facebook here in this room? Okay, so we have about a bit more than half of the audience here at Privacy Week not on Facebook. So you don't have to be on Facebook, right? It's not a valid reaction. I'm not on Facebook, yeah? You have other channels to communicate with your friends and your family. And finally, we have these two reactions to my last year's presentation. It's pointless. I've got nothing to hide. And what do we do now? And what I'd like to do now is talk about these two arguments in more detail to see what do we do about that. Now, here's a viral video from Twitter. Someone is trying to open a man's phone with a Face ID. The video is obviously a joke, I think, but what worries me about this Twitter entry is not the video itself. The video is clearly funny, but the comments to the video. So many of the comments here assume that just because you're hiding something, you must be a bad person. So he's cheating on you, you got to dump him, and so on. So, and that's really damaging to those of us who really have something to hide. That's one of the aspects, right? And we're going to talk about all the minuses of not hiding anything, including this so-called not hiding anything and attacking other people's ability to hide something. But yes, this is one of the problems here. So what happens if you have nothing to hide? I'll get back to that previous argument in a minute, but first, data hoarding. When someone, say a government, a large corporation, or just some rogue hacker who has nothing better to do, like a stalker, for example, hoards a large amount of data about you, that can lead to blackmail because they know a lot about you, maybe some things that you wouldn't want other people to know. And can also lead to impersonation. If you know enough about people, about a person, you can easily steal the identity online, of course, as you well know that. We are far away from all the online resources using proper identification. And the question is, do we want to go there? Do we actually want that? So we have to find a balance. And hiding most of your data, I think, is the right way to go. Now, then we also have this thing where today's authority might change. You may trust your government right now. It may change tomorrow, or in a year, or 10 years. And what happens then? Imagine how easy or how much easier it would have been to commit some of the worst atrocities in history if those men and women had access to today's technology. And finally, herd immunity, the argument that I brought up in part already. Herd immunity means that it's similar to vaccinations. If only people who really have something to hide, like it depends on your background, on where you're from, your country, your set of friends, what you do in your professional life, in your private life. But some of these people are more sensitive to being attacked with their information than others. And those people are the ones most at risk. So even though I may actually have nothing to hide, or almost nothing to hide, I'm smart enough to say that, I still want to do a service to these people who are more vulnerable. And by not hiding anything, you make the few stand out. that actually want to hide something. So what you have to do is just have to all play along. Well, let's take a look at some privacy nightmares that's been going on. This is a slide from my 2018 presentation, Privacy is Dead. It's quite old already. So basically, it pitches this great idea of surveillance cameras in the classroom in China, looking at students' faces and determining if they're paying attention, if they're bored, if they're scared. So you know, you haven't done your homework, so the teacher knows, that one's scared. How did you do your homework? It's a cool idea, right? But a bit creepy, if you ask me. So 2019, so that's how it looked. 2019. We moved it a step forward. So what we have here is Chinese schools scanning children's brains to see if they are concentrating. It's a legit device. I think it works. Let me show you a small video.
Teachers at this primary school in China know exactly when someone isn't paying attention. These headbands measure each student's level of concentration. The information is then directly sent to the teacher's computer and to parents. China has big plans to become a global leader in artificial intelligence. It has enabled a cashless economy where people make purchases with their faces. A giant network of surveillance cameras with facial recognition helps police monitor citizens. Meanwhile, some schools offer glimpses of what the future of high-tech education in the country might look like. Classrooms have robots that analyze students' health and engagement levels. Students wear uniforms with chips that track their locations. There are even surveillance cameras that monitor how often students check their phones or yawn during classes. These gadgets have alarmed Chinese netizens.
Now, don't be mistaken, this tech is coming to Europe. Why would it stay in China? It makes life so easy for parents, for students. I'll get back to students. Actually, lots of technology, abusive technology, I'd say, that we see is being first tested on our children. But here are the Hong Kong protests. Smart people over there. They were actually avoiding using their digital cards, metro cards that they have over there, octopus cards, when going to the protest because they were aware that the government will track them and might ask questions. Now, I'm not a legal expert in Hong Kong, but as far as I understand, participating in a protest is, or at the time was, completely legal. Still, you don't want police asking questions. What if they want to ask a question really, really hard, and you just got to answer? Now, back to school. Under digital surveillance, how American schools spy on millions of kids. Now, this is really recent. A couple days ago, The Guardian made an article about this. And the tech is coming from China, first to the US, and then Europe. Now, it's an interesting article, and you should read it, I think. There are many points being raised there. For example, one of the points of logic behind this, what the schools are saying, we got to prepare the kids for tomorrow's surveillance state. When you're going to go work, you're going to be surveilled, so you better get ready to be surveilled. That's one of the actual points they want to teach kids. ACLU, of course, American Civil Liberties Union, has a different comment about possible chilling effect of that, because schools don't give out the keywords that will flag a student, that will flag some communications. So students become really careful and start self-censoring themselves. Also, this technology works in real time. There are a couple companies doing that, and both of the companies mentioned in the article provide access to the school staff and, in one case, to the parents in real time. We're talking minutes after something has been posted. And they go further than just monitoring students at school. They monitor students at home if they're using either school-owned hardware or school-owned internet resources. And that means that they live in the dystopian future already, and they don't know better than to fight that. Here, this quote is of course about the chilling effect. And interesting that one of the two companies has chosen a very fitting name for themselves, Gaggle. So gag, of course, means to restrict use of mouth or to prevent from exercising freedom of speech, which is what essentially the company is doing. And I find that very disturbing. This is really, really fresh news when we talk about the US here, a couple days old. So I'm still quite shaken about what's going on there and that is going to come over here. Now, a bit older one, couple months old, about data reuse from Facebook. There are court cases around Facebook all the time. There are different leaks happening, and Facebook goes to court all the time. So here's a quote from Facebook's, if I remember correctly, Facebook's lawyer saying, there is no privacy interest in posting to Facebook, because by sharing with 100 friends on a social media platform, you have just negated any reasonable expectation of privacy. So they try to equate Facebook with, you know, telling 100 friends something and then not being able to control if those 100 friends are going to tell someone else. And that's data reuse. And data reuse without consent is bad, because remember, your privacy is all about consent. If I consent, if that's my decision, I consent to give my data to Facebook, give my data to 25 friends on Facebook, that's my limit. I don't want other people to know that data. So even though Facebook's privacy policy may say otherwise, that's still a basic human right. So that's one direction that we have to fight in. Facebook has this, I'm not being sarcastic, cool, good feature, suicide prevention. It's a noble feature. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's a description of it is publicly available on Facebook Facebook tech documentation. So basically how it works is it analyzes what you write. It analyzes when you write it. It analyzes, you know, does the all artificial intelligence thing on your language. It looks at the comments to your post, and then computer automatically flags the post for review by a human being, which is the disturbing part here. I mean, once again, the goal is really noble, but basically so many posts go to a human reviewer completely needlessly. Why can I say that? Because according to the official published algorithm, when you actually take the action, when Facebook takes the action, this is what happens. You get a notice like that. I mean, I'm sure they have their own reasons and their own lawyers and business people that do calculations, but I'd rather that people get this more than they need than some humans reading my messages. Let the computer give it, because if you look back at the scheme here, if the computer doesn't flag the post, human reviewer doesn't see it. Well, unless, of course, there are different processes that have nothing to do with suicide prevention. As you may know, that all messages are liable to being read by Facebook employees, private or public or shared to friends. Or even if you type a message, do not send it and delete it. It's also being saved and can be read by Facebook. So, Facebook dating. Cool new feature available in the United States right now. Will be rolling out in EU in the beginning of next year. Now, there are multiple things about Facebook dating. I don't know if you tried that out. You know, there are some hackers here. You know how to change countries and stuff. According to the descriptions online, there are good things and there are bad things, in my subjective opinion. So the good thing is we get more privacy. Apparently, with Facebook dating rolling out, you have pseudo-anonymity. You can restrict what your potential dates are seeing about you. They don't get access to your whole profile, and they can't link you easily. The bad thing is, the good thing is it extends to your everyday life on Facebook besides using dating. So it also affects how secure your profile is, so that's good. The bad thing is, to opt into the feature, you have to confirm your location physically using a GPS. every time you change your location, you have to have a device that has actual GPS, you have to enable it, and you have to tell Facebook, this is my coordinate. So that's one more piece of information that Facebook is getting out of their new product. Of course, I think Facebook is based around ads, around gathering data, so why would they skip the possibility of getting some new information? Now, let's go to the streets. Well, not literally, but let's go to the streets outside the internet. This is how UK streets have looked like for some time. So we have these are actual real posters, secure beneath the virtual eyes. More CCTV means more security for you, and we're watching out for you. Legitimate posters by the government in the UK, and that's nothing new. What's new is, in the last year, this happened. In May 2019, a man was fined £90 just because someone notified him. He was walking the street, and someone told him, hey, they are doing face recognition there. So what he did, he took his sweater and pulled it over his face and walked like that past the cameras. That was the only crime he did. Police stopped him, forced him to remove the sweater from his face, forced him to be recognized by the cameras, concluded that he had done nothing wrong before, he had no warrants or anything, and simply fined him for hiding his face, which is damn dystopian, if you ask me. Now, we also have the end of end-to-end encryption coming. It's been happening for some time, and we hear louder and louder about it, and I think it's not a coincidence. It's not a Snowden leak. It's not that these intelligence agencies from Five Eyes are losing their plans to the public. I think it's intentional. They've tried other way, and they want to change public's opinion by talking to the press, by pushing for ending warrant-proof encryption, how one of the heads of one of the Five Eyes agencies said. And it's been happening silently. So here is a page from a user manual for WhatsApp. It's not a new page. It's been there for years. And it basically says that custom RAMs and rooted phones aren't supported by WhatsApp. Because what happens if let's say WhatsApp, one of the most popular instant messaging apps, if they kill end-to-end encryption or break it in a way that it's not that secure anymore, not that it's super secure, but you know, then what you can do, you can roll your own WhatsApp, or you can root your phone and you can prevent all unnecessary communication. Well, that is not allowed. No rooted phones. Same applies for iOS, of course, no jailbroken phones. We've had that for a while. So the next step you do, okay, so you use unofficial app if you can't root the phone. Well, again, WhatsApp has been dealing with this for quite some time. It's not new, but they have this new wave that started in February this year, when they started warning users once again to not install unofficial apps. Because if you have an official app, you can control the source code, and you can control if encryption is good or not, if you're leaking data or not. And this is a relatively new part of their manual. So about temporarily banned accounts. So basically, you can get your account temporarily banned, meaning that you've been using third-party app, and then you got to use the real thing. So of course, for us, people who know a bit more about privacy, it's easier. We have different apps that we can use. We have different technologies. We even have PGP, right, that we can go back to in case things don't work out with anything else. Now, let me tell you about myself a bit. When making this presentation, this is my, let's say, third presentation on the privacy topic. I was thinking, when did I start getting serious about privacy? And it's actually earlier than I thought. This is a ticket / invite to a small conference or fair from 2004. And in order to get in, you had to type in your name right here. That's my name over there. And you had to type in your address and your phone number. So back in 2004, I just found that by accident in my trash. Well, on my desk, where's my trash is. So I did just put a dash for my email and phone. I did that. And I also typed in Riga, which is the capital of Latvia. Brīvības 22-4. And Brīvības 22 is a huge hotel that I've never been at back in 2004. So I somehow was, maybe it was a lucky accident, but I somehow felt uneasy when I needed to provide that data. So that's what I did 15 years ago. Now about, let's have some good news. Before we go to bad news, obviously. How can we buy apps anonymously for iOS? For Google, it's easier. I don't know about the buying part, but you can get legitimate apps quite easy. For iOS, what I use is gift cards. So you can actually ask a friend that has a card, a credit card with Apple, to send you a gift card. They can either gift you an app or gift you some amount. And the good thing is you don't even need email address. It asks you where to send the gift card. You just type root at localhost.something, and the gift card will appear on the screen of the buyer, the code. You don't actually have to have an email address. You just give the code, and I can buy an app. Now, when you have the apps, how do you message anonymously? Well, here, for Telegram, you obviously need to have a real phone number. And it's the same for most of the apps. You need to have a real phone number to receive SMS or a callback to identify who you are. If you try to guess it, this is what happens. You can't really get in. So what I do is I go around the world, different conferences. I take a SIM card, and I have a phone number, so I register that. The problem then is it will expire in like half a year or 1 year, and then someone else will register it, and then I'll lose all my stuff. So what I do is, of course, I use the lock codes that are available, right? Registration lock here. For example, which is all cool, but now I got to type it in every month or every twice a month, which is not that good. It's a mild inconvenience for the security that I get. Now, getting postal mail. I've actually had a post office box for, I don't know, 5 years at least, and it's working. It has worked really well for me. I have a post office box. I can give it to anybody. I can give it to anyone of you. You can send me stuff. Send me good and legal stuff, please. That's one problem with it. But at least you can't send like a SWAT team to my house or a killer to my house. Right? It's just a post office box. So that's quite nice. That's a nice feature. I don't know about here in Austria. In Latvia, it costs like 10 or 15 euros per year. So it's really, really affordable. I'm going to have two starting next year. So that's what I do. But there are some problems there. For example, I've had a government agency that I've been mailing by post with not reply to me for a prolonged period of time. I went to them physically and I asked what the hell, and they looked at my letters and said, oh, okay, so that's your address. And then I said, the employee who was trying to reply to you was not born in the Soviet Union, so they didn't recognize that kind of address. So that was a hint at how only old people use that. But go and use that. It's a good privacy feature, especially if you're receiving packages from abroad, say eBay. Now, back to computers. I used to have to browse with JavaScript disabled to have the internet not work for me. Now, all I get to do is browse from Europe. This is one of the comics that I like. The comic is here. So either you agree to their drastic privacy, non-privacy rules, or you click on million messages before you can actually see the image over there. The next one here, this is Forbes.com. It's an online newspaper. Once again, you have to go through tons of information. You can't even read the article before you do that. Of course, if your browser's cookies disabled, that means you get that every single time. Here's New York Times. You can read some of the article. And or you can do I accept. You can also do cross, but they somehow managed to say that by clicking I accept or X on this banner, you consent to our stuff. So that's a nice trick there, right? Because you got to have these options if you serve to people in Europe because of GDPR. This is my favorite one. So this is Washington Post. When you open up an article, it says, so you have an option, you can scroll, you have different options, you can pay like 4 euros per something, or you can browse it free. So you press browse now, and this is what happens. When you press browse now, you get this page saying that there's GDPR, you know, GDPR is good, and we all are fine with that, but please, could you click on the bottom there and then press continue? And that's basically what you have. You have an option to either press I agree, or you can go back to all options and pay for the content. So I don't know if that's legal or not, but it's kind of not nice of them. You know, either you pay or we track you. That's the way you do it. At least you have the option to not read it, right? In our lives, we get into some situations where you are unable to have that third option, to walk away. Here, at least you have that. So that's kind of good. Now, this is a new one. I was trying to buy some components, and I brought with JavaScript disabled, and this is the message I got. So it basically says, it appears you have JavaScript disabled within your browser. Some functions on this page will not work unless you log in. So it actually works without JavaScript. You just want to track me? What's the deal with that? But I mean, in actuality, it mostly works, even without JavaScript, this specific page over here. Okay, so that's a bit about web. Let's go back to, say, kind of real life again. I have a bunch of certificates. I'm not too proud about that, but you know, my line of work requires that I have different certificates. And the thing is, have anyone has any of those or similar certificates? We're not filming you. You can. Oh, some people kind of have. Okay. So when you take an exam, they usually film you, you know, because they want to make sure that you're not cheating. And I'm okay with that. I mean, as long as they delete the recording. A different thing they do is they also take your photo. So I come there with my two IDs, as mandated by the examination rules. I give the IDs. They look at the IDs, look at my face, and then they say, we want to take your photo. And we are currently in the long discussion with this company that is providing the service as to what is the actual legal reason behind the photo, because the first answer they gave to me was identification, which is what ID cards are for. But an interesting thing happened. So after every exam that I take, I've made it my habit to write an official letter to them asking to destroy my photo. And they've done it every time. But one time this happened. So I asked them to delete my photo. And they, you know, we accidentally deleted your account with all your certificates. And I have these public tenders going on where we need to win the grant or whatever. And my certificate codes aren't valid. So if people type it into validator, it says, nope, that guy's a fraud. That doesn't exist. It took them, I think, between 1 and 2 months to restore everything. And at one point, they got... So I'm an honest guy. And I didn't want to tell them, I need these certificates. I wanted them to, you know, look in their backups or wherever. So I didn't tell them what certificates I had. And at one point, you know, they said, we restored everything. I looked at the list. Nope, not everything. And they asked me, OK, so which certificates do you need? Not in that wording. Which certificates did you have? But I still didn't tell them. And then they found in some other backups that, yeah, those are their certificates. So it's quite a mess. And I've been using GDPR way before GDPR was a project. In Latvia, where I'm from, a similar law has existed since 2001. The only difference is the fines were like super small. I've gotten the Data Protection Agency to assign a fine up to, I think, 200 euros to someone for violating my privacy, but that's about it. So that's the only difference. So I've been working with that for quite a long time already. Now, back to digital, mobile apps. Here is Socratic, which is an app that small students use to talk about homework with each other. And when you open the app, it basically says, hey, we need access to your contacts. And Apple provides for a developer a possibility to actually type some text in here, you know, to make sure to explain to this user why are you asking the consent. In this case, it's only for chatting about homework, don't worry. So, you know, you don't worry, you press don't allow, and this happens. We kind of need that. No, not going to work. We also have taxi apps. For example, here, taxi app Bolt. When they changed from Taxify to Bolt, they are working in like 20, 30 countries worldwide, I think, including Latvia and the other Baltic states. When they changed the brand, they changed how this location service... Oh, enable location service. I didn't even notice that before. It's a real screenshot. Don't worry about that. So when they changed the brand, they changed how this... annoying pop-up appears. And you cannot access your data. So there's a button here that you cannot see because it's under the pop-up. And you can access your personal data there, your write history, your payment info, stuff like that. And you cannot access that unless you have location services on, which is crazy. At least you could still, you know, pick up the car manually until they killed my account. So I was asking them about this using regular snail mail. And they wrote me snail mail back saying, since you've lost your trust in us, we're deleting your account. So the Estonian Data Protection Agency is now looking into that. And then we have Yandex Taxi, which is a Russian alternative, also available in Riga. I took one ride with them. And when I tried to take a second ride, you're blocked. Come back 2023. Because I didn't give them my location. I didn't give them access to my contacts. I didn't give them anything. And I guess that's the reason they don't want me if I don't give them data, because what do they earn out of it? Apparently nothing. Now, what I'm hoping for is that Apple and other similar companies that own app stores will make this illegal, because currently you already have some control. And for Apple, reviewing an app can take up to 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And it's certainly within their power to take a look at how it functions without some permissions and forbid all that crap. So not allow apps that unnecessarily block your experience if you don't give them consent. That's what I'm looking for. Now, I also want to talk about WhatsApp. Here is a screencast of me starting a chat with someone in WhatsApp. So first, I got to go to my regular dialer. I got to enter the phone number with the full country code. Then I got dialed. Then I got to turn it off. Then I'm going to go to recent. I got to hold call. Then I'm going to select WhatsApp, select phone. Then I'm calling them on WhatsApp. Then I press stop here because I don't want to call them on WhatsApp. Then I go to calls. Then I press I, and then I press chat. That's how I could start a chat on WhatsApp because I don't have my contact shared with WhatsApp for obvious reasons. WhatsApp are the good guys, at least in this small case. They fixed it. This year, they fixed it. You can actually press a new chat and ask you for a phone number, and you can start a chat. So thank you, WhatsApp, for this. This is great. At least we have that, right? Now, back to Yandex. I took a look at their privacy policy, and they outlined quite clearly it's a special privacy policy for the Baltic states, because I think those are the only or the some of the very few states where they operate outside or inside of Europe. And so they basically say, we need your location, but you can turn it on. We need your phone number. You cannot turn it on because identity. You need your email, and you can even delete it. So that's really cool. But if you scroll down in the privacy policy, you have stuff like, for example, user interaction, device model, manufacturer, operating system name, version, screen size, sensor information. What sensor do you have on your phone? Camera? Identifiers, device identifiers, Android, amount of disk space, system settings, list of installed apps. And they need all of that to improve app performance. And the app cannot function without that. So if you don't give access to that, app doesn't work. What the hell, Yandex? Well, I mean, we know where it's coming from. So anyway, one thing I do in order to be able to survive in today's world, I use prepaid anonymous cards. I don't know if it's legal here in Austria, but in Latvia, I can go into a shop, I can give them money, they give me a card, and I can pay with it for transport, for example. Now, the card doesn't have a name, not in their database, not on the card, nowhere. So I'm trying to buy the main here with pork bun, and I leave the name blank because obviously the card doesn't have a name. But none of the forms I tried work with that. We get a nice error. Maybe if I remove the actual field with the HTML editor, then I can submit it. But I always write some random name in there, and it's fun and it works as long as I don't get banned. Now speaking of communication, I got a spam message. In SMS. That happens, right? So the spam message basically said, hello, unfortunately, your application for loan has been denied. Crediton.lv. And it didn't come from number. It came from a text number, as it's possible in SS7, of course. And I couldn't call them back. So what I did, I went to their webpage, I looked at it, and I tried to call them. Unfortunately, it doesn't connect, because I don't have an outbound number. It appears as private number. So I couldn't call them. So I got on my bike, and I went to them. And we discussed this. But it wasn't a long discussion. So they asked what the problem is. I showed them this. They asked me for my number. I gave them the number. And they went into a back room, talked to the IT, came back. Nope, it's not in our database. We didn't send it. And I was OK with that. I mean, nothing says here that it's legit. Maybe someone is using their name. It happens a lot, lots of scammers. I said, OK, sorry, no problem. If you didn't send it, no problem. So 7 days later, I get another message from Credit.lv. You can win like 50 euros, something, something, if you go into your Credit.lv profile and renew your information, stuff like that. I take my phone. I call them. Doesn't connect because I have a private number. I look at the webpage again. It says works from, I think, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. So I look at my clock. It's like 10 past 9 in the evening. So I get on my bike. I go to their office where I've been already. It's closed. Apparently, the working time is for the people who have a normal phone that can call them. So I go. I save my gas bill for my motorcycle. I go there again. I save my gas bill again, and I say, "What the hell?" They look again in the database. Oh yeah, we found it. Sorry. Apparently, someone entered it, which is again not their fault, right? You can enter a random phone number. Not their fault. I asked them, do you validate the phones? They said, yeah, we validate them when we approve the credit. If the credit is not approved, we never validate that, because the government doesn't ask us to. So I mean, that's all fine and dandy. But the problem is, here was the place where they told or lied that they don't have my data. So I submitted an electronic document to them by email saying, this is the 1 euro I spent on gas here, 1 euro here. You owe me 2 euros. And they sent me an email asking, what's your bank account number? So I replied, I don't use bank account numbers. Please send via Western Union or by post. And the creepy part is, a week later, looking at my bank account, there's the money. And I'm still too afraid to ask them where they got my bank account, because I've never taken any loans, let alone from them. No idea how that happened, but there's the money. Reimbursement according to your claim. Oh, that's the creepiest part about it. Now, let's talk a bit about fingerprints. Fingerprints and passports. You remember the good old days when you could travel without being considered a criminal? Because when this thing started happening, we were like, hey, only criminals get their fingerprints taken, and now everyone has their fingerprints taken, right? Now, they assured us in Latvia that we only store the fingerprint in your passport, which is kind of OK. If they take a fingerprint, they put it into the chip directly, perfect. Why not? Provides for better safety at the borders, automation. Not that I like it, but you know. So I decided to take a look. And I liked writing lots of letters to different government agencies. So I wrote and asked them, hey, by the way, are you by any chance storing my fingerprint? And then from the friends on the inside, I heard that when the letter got received, they quickly started writing and implementing the biometric database law that allows them to do what they were doing. So they actually were storing the hash of the fingerprint in a database, which is, once again, yeah, for police work, it's probably good. I don't like it, but it's probably good. When the biometric law was passed, what happened is that I used our local version of GDPR to ask, hey, what data do you have about me? So the first letter I got, we're police, go screw yourself, which I challenged with the Data Protection Authority. They fined the police 200 euros, and I got the data. Basically, what the hash in the database is VSQ file, which is FBI-made standard wavelet scalar quantization for black and white fingerprint images. I got these two files for every document that I had. And luckily, I was able to find one single place on the internet where there is software that allows you to look at VSQ files. So I compiled it, and my fingerprint. Well, not my actual fingerprint, by the way, but you're welcome to try. So they're actually storing your whole fingerprint. So that's a mess. I mean, if you do good things and the government thinks that they don't like your good things, they might, not my government, but you know, the bad government in 20 years might take a fingerprint and put it on a dead body somewhere. That might happen. Who knows? Now, public transport. cameras everywhere. Cameras in Latvia, cameras here in Austria, cameras in Estonia. Estonia was the first of the countries that I noticed that added microphones to the cameras in public transport. Do you have those? Do you know? Yeah, you don't. In Latvia, we don't have those, but they started changing the warning labels a couple months ago. There was warning, we are doing video recording. Now it's warning, we are doing video and audio recording. So, damn. So basically, what I want to say here is it's getting to be really expensive to get privacy for yourselves. It's a luxury. You got to be in good standing, because driving public transport, you cannot get your privacy. Airlines are a bit better that way. Well, not the security part, airport scanners, of course. The problem with airport scanners they have is artificial intelligence taking decisions in a non-transparent way. That's my main problem. I mean, if a creep wants to look at my photos, yeah, whatever. I don't want to be involved, do that. But the AI, I have no idea how it... And I mean, anyway, every time I'd go through, I'd have something, and they will still pat me down. So I always try to opt out of those. But speaking of privacy, so in the airplane, that is where you can work normally. Because I love working. If it's a long journey, I don't want to waste time. I love working. And you cannot type on passwords or confidential information when the camera's on top of you. And in the airplane, that's possible. That's why I sit in emergency exit rows. It has more space and don't have to pay for business class. But you have the thing where shops in the airport ask for your boarding passes. And it's like a huge thing around in Germany and surrounding countries now, where they will straight out deny you to buy anything. I think they had a large meeting after GDPR and decided we can ask for that. It's always a game for me, like 50-50 chance. It's a lottery when I take a bottle of like a soft drink or some chocolate to bring back home, and I stand in the line. 50% I get it, 50% no, but they're gonna send me home because I'm not showing them my boarding pass. It has my name in there. I think it has my gender in there as well. It has my frequent flight number. None of the clerks or the shift managers were able ever to explain to me what are they using the data for. They just say, we need your flight number. So I give them my flight number. No, we need to scan it. How do I know you're not saving that? So my suggestion here is, let's make a barcode app that generates random boarding passes. But let's only use that for shopping, so it stays legal, OK? So that's my idea. We can make an app like that, and then our problems will be solved. So finally, should we fix privacy? Because there are two sub-questions to ask here. One, maybe everything's fine already. Maybe there's nothing to fix. And if it's not fine, the second question is it worth it? So current status. Users are not really demanding privacy. Users don't care. The average Joe doesn't care. And that is a huge problem. We cannot, as a community, if you're 1% of the population, even if you're 5% of the population, we cannot effectively demand our governments to do anything in the direction that we want to go if we're that little. We need the users to demand privacy. And currently, they do not do that. We have cookie law, which I marked as neutral. I mean, we have it. It's annoying. It doesn't do anything. So we have that. We have GDPR. And for big data, it doesn't do anything. So all these big companies online, they just put these notices here and make it super hard for you to opt out. So some more work is needed there. But GDPR for the rest of the data, for offline world, for smaller companies, it works perfectly. All you got to do is use it. I've tried myself. It's good. It's amazing. Now we have surveillance technology improving all the time. I'm talking about mass surveillance technology here, which is, of course, threat to privacy and agencies just being a bit lazy. And for encryption, you'd think that encryption is okay. We live in a good time. I mean, we already have alternatives. We have post-quantum encryption available as well, so it's all good. But when we talk about encryption as it's actually implemented in the apps, then it's not that good. Then we understand it's quite fragile, actually. So looking forward, let's forget about the cookie law and let's talk about what we need to change. Now, user demand and GDPR come together. We need to inform users that GDPR is cool, that they are able to use GDPR to their benefit, to their privacy. For that, we will, of course, need users to understand that they deserve privacy. You know how when a child grows up without love, they have a hard time understanding in their adult life that they deserve love. It's what's going to happen to the children now, growing without privacy. And I think it's already been happening in some sense before that. And we also need to make tools to make GDPR requests easily available to users. And I've seen some of them online, but we need some more of them. GDPR for big data. We need European Parliament to work on that, and we need to revise, to amend GDPR to make sure it's easier to use for when dealing with big companies. Now, for surveillance technology, we have to find solutions that will enable those most at risk to prevent or to make it harder for them to be spied on, or at least mass spied on. And for encryption, well, we need to find something good between PGP. You know how hard it's to crack, well, to use as well, right? You're doing that, yeah, to use, yeah. But to crack PGP, if you use just PGP without any shady plugins, but it's super hard to use as well. And new apps, they have great crypto in there, but will you notice if the server will add a third party? Will you notice that your client is updated to ignore that, to not show you the warning? We won't. So we need to work with that. And I think we need everybody from tech, from legal, and most importantly, users to come together and work on that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Great talk. Are there any questions for Curtis? No questions at the moment. Ah.
Come on, don't be so shy and ask the company where have your bank account data.
I'm not shy. I'm seriously freaked out. I don't want to know where they. It's like you know, if I ask them where you got my data, and they are forced to tell, yeah, we got video cameras in your house for the last 5 years. I don't want to know that. It's all about the feeling for me. I'm good.
Okay, so thanks a lot, really.
Thank you.
Give him a great applause again. It was fun, it was inspiring, it was really nice to listen to you. So follow Kirdis at Twitter, it will be a good idea. Yeah, anyway, thank you.
Thanks.